For What's Universe Time, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. The ringleader of last week's Paris attacks is dead. French officials confirmed Abdelhamid Abaoud was killed in a police raid Wednesday. The Paris prosecutor's office said his bullet-riddled body was found inside an apartment targeted in the seven-hour police raid in Saint-Denis, a northern suburb of Paris. He was identified from fingerprints. The manhunt continues, meanwhile, for at least one suspected terrorist on the run since last Friday. French officials admit they do not know where Salah Abdeslam is, but the search for him intensified across France and Belgium Thursday and also spread to the Netherlands. President Barack Obama says Islamic State can only be defeated if there is a political agreement in Syria. Speaking at the end of the Asia-Pacific conference in the Philippines, he said there can be no place for President Bashar al-Assad in the future of Syria. Meanwhile, President Assad told Italian state television that no political process to end the civil war can begin while what he called terrorists occupy parts of Syria. The Republican-controlled U.S. House of Representatives voted Thursday to suspend President Obama's plan to resettle 10,000 Iraqi and Syrian refugees in the United States in the next year, but he is promising to veto the measure if it passes the Senate. Some lawmakers have expressed concern that terrorists from Syria and Iraq will enter the country, along with refugees, and carry out attacks in the United States, similar to the ones in Paris last week. The fate of the legislation in the Senate is uncertain. President Obama says the refugees undergo a rigorous vetting process before being allowed into the country and dismiss claims they pose a greater security threat. This is VOA News. Two Palestinian attacks targeting Israelis killed five people Thursday, the latest in an almost two-month-long wave of Palestinian stabbings and other attacks. In the first incident, a knife-wielding Palestinian man stabbed two Israelis in a Tel Aviv office building before being detained by bystanders and handed over to police. Later Thursday, three people, one confirmed as Israeli and another believed to be the assailant, were killed in a shooting and car attack near a Jewish settlement south of Jerusalem. A number of people were wounded. Israeli spy Jonathan Pollard is set to be released from a U.S. prison Friday, but his desired move to Israel will have to wait. Pollard, who is now 61, is a former U.S. Navy Investigative Service civilian analyst who was sentenced to life in prison in 1987 after pleading guilty to selling classified information to Israel. He is expected to settle in the New York area while he spends at least the next 5 years on parole. Pollard will be barred from traveling outside the country, including to Israel, without permission. The UN General Assembly asked all members Thursday, in particular Britain, South Africa, and the United States, to turn over any information they may have on the death of Secretary General Dag Hammarskjöld in 1961. The UN chief died in a plane crash on his way to broker a ceasefire in Katanga, a breakaway state in what is now the Democratic Republic of Congo. An independent investigation said in July that new information emerged indicating the crash may not have been an accident. The new information includes eyewitnesses who say they saw another plane in the air as Secretary General Hammarskjöld's jet approached the airport, and others who believe his plane was on fire before it hit the ground. A majority of parliamentarians in Tanzania approved Majaliwa Kassim Majaliwa as the new prime minister, and he's pledged to work with the opposition. The UN General Assembly's Human Rights Committee once again rebuked Iran for human rights violations. The non-binding resolution, which was drafted by Canada, was adopted Thursday. The resolution is based on a report by a UN investigator who says executions in Iran have been rising at an exponential rate since 2005 and could top 1,000 this year. The investigation is also critical of Iran's crackdown on activists, journalists, and dissidents. Iran's Deputy UN Representative, Ambassador Hossein Dagani, slammed the resolution, calling it a selective and politicized distortion of facts. Police used water cannon to disrupt protesters Thursday in Manila, where Asia-Pacific leaders wrapped up a summit focused on economic issues, territorial disputes, and global efforts to combat terrorism. There were no reports of injuries during the clashes, which occurred about 1 kilometer from the convention center where the two-day APEC conference was held. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, November 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Tanzania's parliament approves the country's new prime minister.
He was a junior minister for a long time, but I mean, otherwise, I don't know whether one can say that he has been tried and tested in any complicated situations of governance.
That's Professor Zevery Waitama of the Josiah Kabila University College in Tanzania. South Sudan's parliament approves a constitutional amendment to give President Salva Kiir new powers. Is Zimbabwe's first lady campaigning to one day succeed her aging husband? And Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaks to the nation as one of the country's leading employers announces plans for a massive layoff of workers.
As the chief communicator of the country, she needed to say to the country where we were and that the government will look at taking some extraordinary measures to be able to contain the situation and to put us back on track.
Louis Brown's Liberia's Minister of Information, French authorities said the ringleader of Paris attacks was killed in a raid, and Malawi's first graders use iPads to improve learning. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Tanzania's parliament on Thursday approved Majaliwa Kassim Majaliwa as the country's new prime minister. He immediately pledged to work with the opposition. Majaliwa was a junior minister in former President Jakaya Kikwete's government. President John Magufuli, who was inaugurated earlier this month, is expected to soon name members of his new cabinet. Professor Zevery Waitama of the Josiah Kabila University College tells reporter Peter Clotty that it was not a surprise that Majaliwa was approved because the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party has a majority in parliament.
He was endorsed by parliament by a large majority, but of course, again, that is a very difficult gate, you know, because parliament is dominated by the ruling party CCM, so the prime minister, his name was suggested by the president, so I can't see how anybody from Member of Parliament from CCM could have voted him down, even if they had wished it. But in a way, I think that is early days debate whether he's popular or not popular.
Some people are asking, does he have the pedigree to lead the government business in Parliament?
Well, again, he was a junior minister for a long time. He was dealing with the nitty-gritties of primary and secondary education in the Prime Minister's office, which deals with the local government. But, I mean, otherwise, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether one can say that he has been tried and tested in any complicated situations of governance.
Some people are asking whether President John Magufuli wants to change the way things are done because he himself is regarded as a hardworking, no-nonsense cabinet minister. Now he is president. He said things will not be business as usual. But in your view, does that go into the narrative of him changing how things are usually done since he was elected into office?
To me, this is some indication of the difficulties of his being able to act independently. The Constitution doesn't allow him to choose anybody. It has to be someone who is already elected as a member of parliament from a constituency. Secondly, I think his hand was also tied to some traditions that are not constitutional, but they have to be adhered to. For instance, you could see that this person is from southern Tanzania. It would have been very difficult for him to choose someone from the lake zone where he himself comes, because that would have raised the eyebrows.
Well, Professor Loitama, the president has visited a number of places and he's giving a warning. He said people, government officials or civil servants who are not effective will be kicked out of jobs and all that. How are people reacting to this?
There are those who voted for him because he promised that he was going to change things. He's going to make it difficult for business as usual to be run of the day.
That was Professor Zevery Waitama of the Josiah Kabila University College. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Tanzania's commercial capital, Dar es Salaam. Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf on Thursday addressed the nation, calling on Liberians to be ready to face what she called the stark reality that confronts us as a nation and people. The president's speech came on the same day that one of Liberia's leading employers, ArcelorMittal, the world's largest steel maker, announced it will cut 450 jobs in Liberia to offset losses caused by the global decline in the price of iron ore. President Sirleaf said her government will do all it can to ensure that the country remains afloat. Information Minister Louise Brown says the government has been in negotiations with ArcelorMittal about what could be done to protect Liberian jobs.
As you may be aware, there is a sharp decline in the prices of Liberia's major export commodity of iron ore and rubber. And we have been in negotiations with ArcelorMittal and other concessionaires to institute some mitigating measures by which we can continue to protect Liberian jobs, whether it be through subsidies and other concessions that we may need to make. And so our Ministry of Labor, our Ministry of Finance and Development are continuing those negotiations to the extent that we can put in the measures to make sure that Liberians do not lose those jobs at these difficult times. This government is looking at all options available to do so.
So President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf took what I would call the unusual step to address the nation on Thursday night. What did she have to say?
Well, she basically recounted the things we have been able to achieve together as a government and people, looking back, reflecting on where we were in 2006, drawing distinction as to where we are today, but basically saying this is the collective effort of Liberians holding together, working together, focusing on the things that are right for the country. And so today we are on a path to sustainable growth and development. But the truth of our circumstances also is that we confront a slow pace in the projected growth, economic growth of our country as a result of exogenous and endogenous factors, one being the drop in prices of our main exports, but the other being the fallout of the deadly Ebola virus disease, which we are beginning to experience right now. But then she laid out a plan as to how we will get out of this difficulty if Liberians continue to work together.
The speech she made, it doesn't mean that she feels that Liberia is in trouble. Is that correct?
No. Certainly the sky is not falling. But that as the chief communicator of the country, she needed to say to the country where we were, and that the government will look at taking some extraordinary measures to be able to contain the situation and to put us back on track. You know that during the Ebola outbreak, many of our development processes and programs were stalled. They came literally to a halt. Now we are picking back up, and then suddenly we have to deal with the crunching drop in the prices of our meat exports.
Louis Brown is Liberia's Minister of Information. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. South Sudan's parliament on Thursday amended the country's transitional constitution to give President Salva Kiir the power to appoint new state assembly lawmakers and governors, which will pave the way for splitting the country into 28 states from the current 10. As Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba, minority lawmakers with the Sudan People's Liberation Movement for Democratic Change walked out of the session.
Before the vote was called to change the constitution, an argument erupted between the leader of the minority SPLM-DC and the speaker, who is backed by the ruling SPLM party members.
First of all,
the order is in proper order.
But my procedure is in order because
it is not in order. Please,
the attendance here is less than two-thirds.
Minority leader Onyoti Adigonyi-Kwech argues with the speaker Manasseh Magok-Rundiel over a point of procedure, questioning whether a quorum was present to hold the vote on amending the constitution. Minutes later, minority MPs walked out. Despite the disagreement, the vote was held and the amendment passed. Speaker Rundiel:
I thank you very much for passing this. although your opponents are maybe lying, and they should actually they see the number. So we have passed this with the two-thirds NLA and two-thirds unanimously.
Under Article 162 of the Constitution, President Kiir will have the power to divide the territory of the Republic of South Sudan into states and other areas in accordance with the procedures prescribed by law. And Article 164 gives the President the power to appoint members of state assemblies during the interim period of governance. Article 165 allows the President to appoint governors of each state during the transitional period. Lawmaker Michael Makwe, who is a lawyer, says the amendments are legal.
This amendment is in accordance with the presentation which was made by the Minister of Justice in accordance with the initiative raised by His Excellency the President. This amendment will give way for the establishment of the 28 states as came in the establishment order.
Makwe says the order of the President establishing the 28 states has now been referred to the Council of States for a vote. Opposition leader Lamakola Jawin had asked it that a constitutional court revoke the president's decision to declare 28 states, but the court has not ruled on that request. Adigo insists that today's vote was unconstitutional.
All the members of parliament, and which I showed you just now, we are 297. Now, two-thirds of 297 is supposed to be 198. Now, the attendant before was 189, less by 10. So it is unconstitutional.
Minority MPs were not the only lawmakers who walked out of today's session. 37 members from the Greater Equatorial Region boycotted the sitting. Observers with the Sud Institute and others have said the president's move to split the country into 28 states at this time is not moving the country forward toward peace. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wodo in Juba.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, November 20th. Daybreak Africa time is 17 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe First Lady Grace Mugabe told party faithfuls on Thursday that she now skips meal in solidarity with thousands of Zimbabweans who cannot afford three meals a day due to the country's biting economic crisis and drought. Mrs. Mugabe told residents of Mbare high-density suburb that her aging husband supports her political activities, adding she had brought goodies of rice and maize meal as an early Christmas present for the struggling city residents. Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service has details.
That's the song Unconquerable being blasted as First Lady Grace Mugabe arrived in Mbare as she resumed her rallies at the Chishawasha grounds today, bringing the high-density suburb to a standstill. Businesses were forced to shut down too as the First Lady took over. Ms. Mugabe told supporters that everything that she is doing politically has been sanctioned by her aging husband. She walked back on her criticism of the country's Liberation War veterans, telling her supporters that she respects the war vets. At her last rally, she took a swipe at the war veterans, saying there was nothing special about being a war veteran. Ms. Mugabe clarified her position, saying she only has problems with war veterans who are pushing factional agendas in ZANU-PF, adding those she targeted and threatened to demonstrate against her, saying, quote, I like war veterans. I stay with the greatest war veteran at home.
The First Lady touched on familiar themes such as factionalism and corruption and took a swipe at the West for allegedly trying to destabilize the country, though through unspecified activities. On the controversial tractors that she has been dishing out at her rallies, the First Lady said she is distributing them to cooperatives, adding they are not being given for free. Mrs. Mugabe has taken flak for distributing tractors acquired by the government from Brazil at party rallies. Mrs. Mugabe cast herself as a person of the people, saying she had brought food to the masses.
Christmas has come early for you, the people of Mbare, because your mother has brought you a lot of goodies, including rice, 150 kilograms of it, and each person will get at least 3 kilograms. So Christmas has indeed come early.
She also spoke about factionalism in ZANU-PF.
zvakaitika ndezvekuti factionalism yamo muzanu pf hakuna anya iripo factionalism.
Factionalism does exist in ZANU-PF. Those who are promoting factionalism know themselves. Some of them I told them off. That's when I talked about some Iran war veterans who are being used in the party to fund factionalism. That is what I am against.
Political analyst Petsai Ruhanya, director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, says Ms. Mugabe's mission is to show Mr. Mugabe is still very much in charge.
That was Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe Service reporting from our Washington studio. First grade students at 63 public schools in Malawi are now using iPads as part of a new initiative to improve learning. The goal is to reach 3 million students in 5,300 government primary schools across the country. It is also aimed at addressing challenges like textbook shortages and overcrowding. But some educators are questioning if technology is the answer. Lamek Mansina reports for VOA from Lilongwe, Malawi.
First and second graders in Malawi are lagging far behind standards in counting and literacy, according to a recent study by the international development NGO Volunteer Services Overseas. Some officials say large class sizes are to blame. VSO began distributing nearly 2,000 iPads to classrooms around the country in December 2014.
So we want to introduce technology to be a support for the ministry, for the teacher, to provide essentially one-to-one tuition for the child so that they can master the basic foundations of numeracy and literacy.
Students work in special learning centers. Teachers say the initiative is a relief.
Because in the normal class we have a lot of learners, so it's difficult for a teacher to go to each and every learner.
Students listen through headphones in the local language, Chichewa, and answer questions. The app was designed by the UK-based software company, 1Billion.
During normal classes, it becomes difficult to ask a teacher to repeat what she has said, while with iPad learning, we just press the repeat button.
Project implementers say students using the iPads are now testing as many as 2 grade levels ahead. But educators say the devices cannot replace the teachers.
And we have few teachers. For example, if a teacher is absent, and it's difficult to operate the learning center and the class with one teacher.
Education activists question the sustainability of the program.
So coming in with the iPad, it may solve the congestion problem, but then have we solved the lack of teachers problem? And we hear that the program is being funded. How sustainable is this program to the Malawian government? Are we going to be able to continue to run it after the donors have gone?
VSO says efforts are underway to secure continued funding. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe, Malawi.
French officials have confirmed the suspected ringleader of last week's Paris attacks was killed in a police raid on Wednesday. Lisa Bryant has more from the French capital.
Belgian jihadist Abdelhamid Abaoud has eluded police for months. He's boasted of staging attacks for the Islamic State group and appears to have sneaked back into Europe from Syria undetected. Most recently, he's believed to be the planner of last Friday's attacks in the French capital that killed 129 people and wounded another 350. But police have finally caught up with him, with French authorities confirming Abaoud died in a pre-dawn police raid Wednesday north of Paris. A statement by the Paris prosecutor's office said his body was found riddled with bullets in an apartment building in the town of Saint-Denis. It was unclear, the statement said, whether he had detonated a suicide vest.
Pour la plupart d'entre vous, mais grâce à l'opération hier,
Prime Minister Manuel Valls announced the news to the French Parliament, who will be voting on extending emergency powers in France for another 3 months.
Alors je trouve que c'est vraiment une chose superbe pour nous, pour la sécurité.
Ordinary Parisians are also happy. Taxi driver Samir Elmir said it's wonderful for us, especially when it comes to security. We were told he was at large, which is worrying. A female suicide bomber was also killed in Wednesday's raid. Eight others have been arrested. French authorities say those targeted may have been planning another terrorist attack. The whereabouts of at least one other suspect in last week's attacks, Salah Abdeslam, remains unclear. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. South African hosts Orlando Pirates make their maiden appearance in the Orange African Confederations Cup final when they host Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel in Soweto tomorrow, Saturday. Etoile du Sahel last competed in the finals of this cup in 2008, where they were runners-up. Elsewhere, Burundi face perennial giant killers Zanzibar in the opening match at the 30th edition of the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, tomorrow Saturday. The encounter will give way to hosts Ethiopia tackling Rwanda. On Sunday, Somalia play Tanzania mainland before defending champions Kenya engage Uganda. In Switzerland, Qatar's former FIFA vice president, Mohammed bin Ammam, appears to hold crucial evidence regarding the bid to stage the FIFA World Cups in 2018 and 2022. Switzerland's Office of the Attorney General revealed in Zurich on Thursday. Bin Ammam played a key role in Qatar's successful bid to win the right to stage the 2022 FIFA World Cup. Swiss authorities investigating both bidding processes claim they are 120 suspicious transactions linked to FIFA's decision to award the 2018 and 2022 tournaments to Russia and Qatar respectively and seek Bin Ammam's testimony. Bin Ammam was once very influential in FIFA before he challenged Sepp Blatter in the 2011 FIFA presidential elections. Eventually, FIFA slapped Bin Ammam with a life ban in all football matters for a second time in 2012. Turning to athletics, Uganda's elite endurance runners line up for the country's premier distance race, the MTN Kampala City Marathon, in the Ugandan capital Kampala on Sunday. Besides winning attractive cash prizes, athletes seek to impress the Uganda Athletics Federation selectors, who will use the event to choose who gets to represent the country at the IAAF World Half Marathon Championships in Cardiff, Wales, in Britain on the 26th of March next year. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of African news. Tanzania's parliament on Thursday approved Kassim Majaliwa as the country's new prime minister. He immediately pledged to work with the opposition. Majaliwa was the junior minister in former President Jakaya Kikwete's government. Observers said Majaliwa was approved because the ruling Chama cha Mapinduzi party has a majority in parliament. And people worldwide embrace fundamental democratic values that include free expression despite a documented global decline in democratic rights in recent years, according to a Pew Research Center survey of respondents in 38 nations. A majority in nearly all the nations surveyed say it is at least somewhat important to live in a country with free speech. That's it for this Friday's November 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good weekend.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis travels to Africa. Making his first trip to the continent, the pontiff will visit Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic in a pilgrimage that will bring him face to face with Islamic extremism and Christian-Muslim violence. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they discuss the significance of the Pope's mission next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our 5-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.